Hey there, welcome to a new episode of the Liberators Network podcast. I'm Christian Verwijs, and in today's episode we're going to talk about why it is that zombie scrum teams struggle to continuously improve. But before doing that, I want to take a moment to thank the patrons that joined us since the most recent episode. Their contributions make it possible to create content like this for the community. Christian Weinert, Tom Suter, Bas den Uyl, Beatrice Dutois, Jeremy Nathaniel Akers, André van Zet, Tom Galoos, and Samir Karandikar, thank you so much for joining and supporting our work. Patreon.com has become really important for us to build a growing community of engaged patrons. You can check it out at patreon.com/liberators. Aside from supporting us in creating content like this, which in all honesty is our primary source of revenue at the moment, it's also possible to connect with all the other patrons to start initiatives together and to give and get help. So there are a lot of benefits to supporting us other than just supporting us. We also give you a lot of nice things in return. You can check it out at patreon.com/liberators. Now, without further ado, let's move on to the episode. Zombie Scrum is the name we've given to something that looks like Scrum from a distance, but isn't anything but on closer inspection. So on the one hand, you may find the mechanics of the Scrum framework in place, like the roles, like the artifacts and the events. But on the other hand, there is no working increment at the end of a sprint. Stakeholders are not involved. There is no autonomy for the teams. They cannot make any decisions on their own about the product. And nobody is trying to improve the situation. We found that a lot of Scrum teams are actually suffering from many of these symptoms, and we've written a book about this called The Zombie Scrum Survival Guide. This episode is based on some of the writing in that book. Now, if this appeals to you, if you're interested in finding out more after this episode, you can go to zombiescrum.org to pre-order the book, which will be available on November 23rd. Now, in all honesty, few teams start from a position where the Scrum framework works like a charm from the start. Scrum is radically different from the way that teams have built products and worked with stakeholders in the past. Scrum teams usually need to improve in many different areas and overcome many different barriers in order to reach their goals of higher customer satisfaction. Because every team, every challenge, and every context is unique, it doesn't suffice to simply copy the best practices from elsewhere and expect them to work in your own organization and your own context. Instead, Scrum teams need to experiment with different approaches to find what works for them. Unfortunately, we found that many Scrum teams struggle to improve at all, and that easily leads to zombie Scrum, which is something that may look like Scrum from a distance, but lacks the beating heart. And in this episode, we address one of the most common reasons for this, a lack of tangible improvements. Now, how do you know that there is a lack of tangible improvements? What are the symptoms or the signs you can look for in your own team or organization? The first thing we always look for is whether or not the sprint retrospectives actually result in actionable improvements, and often that's not the case. Another thing to look for is that for the actions that come out of a sprint retrospective, we often find that it is unclear where to start and what success looks like, or even who should be taking care of it. Another sign to look for is that Scrum teams or Scrum masters focus their improvements mostly on making the Scrum events more fun, with more games, more diversity, and more facilitation techniques. We also sometimes notice that Scrum teams don't inspect metrics during sprint retrospectives to identify actionable improvements. And finally, something to look for is that team members often put the responsibility of performing an action on others, often people outside the team. So that makes it very hard for them to control whether or not the improvement is going to take place because someone outside of the team has to take care of it. No tangible improvements. The Scrum framework provides a clear criterion for success: deliver a potentially releasable increment every single sprint. And since that requires addressing many hard challenges, you won't be able to do that overnight. So improving incrementally in small steps is your best strategy to keep change manageable and motivating. We run into serious problems, however, when the small steps that people come up with are vague and non-specific, like, we have to improve communication, or We have to increase collaboration with stakeholders. Although these are good goals, they don't tell you where to begin and what success looks like. Teams with improvements like this should ask themselves, when we communicate better, what will be different? And what would it look like if we increased our collaboration with stakeholders? What would be different in that case? How differently would we behave? Specific improvements with metrics help people know what they are committing to. Vague improvements are easily agreed on and hard to judge on whether or not you've actually accomplished them. Unclear improvements make it very difficult to actually succeed in improving at all and building the confidence that you can actually change things for the better. Another example of this is what we've come to call Happy Clappy Scrum. Here, Scrum teams focus their energy on making the Scrum events as fun, lighthearted, and energizing as possible, leveraging the many games and facilitation techniques that can be found online. This often happens when teams cannot influence impediments directly, and their well-intentioned improvements remain superficial. Although there is great value in creating inclusive and engaging environments, this doesn't help when the team is not actually inspecting their results and adapting their product and their approach based on the feedback they receive. Rather than using the Scrum events as opportunities to remove larger impediments to inspecting and adapting, the Scrum teams focuses on re-energizing people to survive another sprint amidst a wasteland of zombie Scrum. But no matter how fun the sprint retrospective is, teams won't feel better when they have no feedback about the impact they're having on real users, on real customers. No matter how energizing and fast your sprint planning is, it won't make your stakeholders happier when they still have to wait for a year for the work to reach them. So one important skill for Scrum teams is to learn how to be specific about what to improve, and how to break down improvements into small steps. Just as refining large items on the product backlog into smaller items makes it easier to complete them, breaking down large improvements into small steps makes it more likely your improvements will succeed. Teams that suffer from zombie Scrum tend to either get stuck in huge and demotivating improvements, like product owner should have greater mandate, or they get lost in vague improvements that don't tell them where to start at all. Now, the question, of course, is how do you actually create those actionable improvements based on maybe more abstract goals that you have in mind? We offer many examples in our book, The Zombie Scrum Survival Guide, which you can pre-order at zombiescrum.org. But if you're not going to buy the book right now, something that we find really helpful is something called 15% Solutions. It's a liberating structure created by Keith McCandless and Henry Lipmanovich and is based on Gareth Morgan's idea of 15% Solutions. The idea behind this is that often we cannot control 85% of our environment and the work that we do. Let's focus our improvements on the 15% that we can control. If we focus our efforts there, we're more likely to actually create change. And if everyone in the team does that, and everyone around the team does that too, then eventually all those small changes together will create large changes in the organization. So one thing we always do at the end of a sprint retrospective is to ask everyone in the team, how are you going to contribute personally to making these improvements possible? What's the first step that you are going to take yourself that you have full control over and that you do not have to ask permission for from anyone else outside this team? So by drawing the improvements very much to the personal level of every team member, you make it easier for people to commit to something that they want to change, but you also make it easier for them to figure out where to start with that change. So this is just a very helpful technique. You can find more information on liberatingstructures.com. There is a page there in the index called 15% Solutions, and it gives you examples of how you can use this. There's actually a couple of steps that you can go through if you're interested in this. What else makes it hard to improve continuously? Because aside from a lack of tangible improvements, there are actually many other reasons we found why zombie Scrum teams don't improve continuously. So we're going to give you a brief overview of some of the reasons, and we cover them in more detail in the Zombie Scrum Survival Guide. But one of the causes we also identified is that in zombie Scrum, we don't value mistakes. So organizations that suffer from zombie Scrum avoid making mistakes at all costs or don't recognize what they can learn from them. For example, when Scrum teams can deploy their increment on their own because there is too much risk, or because releases don't happen every sprint because it seems too difficult, and new technologies are avoided because they are too daring and there is too much risk involved if they go wrong. When you say that the Scrum framework is a way to fail fast, people sometimes respond with wide-eyed amazement. Why would you ever want to fail in the first place? Instead, let's just call it succeed fast, and let's not talk about experiments or minimum viable products. In fact, Barry actually worked for an organization where the use of the name experiments was forbidden. It was just not something that you could say, because an experiment implied that you didn't know the outcome, that you weren't certain if it was going to succeed or not, so no experiments. Now, instead of seeing mistakes as an opportunity for learning, organizations often see mistakes as something to avoid. Another cause that we identified is that Scrum teams don't recognize the human factors of work. Organizations that suffer from zombie Scrum spend little time on human factors. They either don't see the need, or they simply assume that employees will behave professionally, and so they implicitly and explicitly signal that spending time on work agreements, talking about tension, team building, getting to know each other, and making your team psychologically safe is not real work. They fail to appreciate that teams are social systems with important social needs. Now, we've talked at length about this in earlier episodes, and we've also written blog posts about this that can tell you much more about what human factors are actually at play at work. And it's, I think, very important for Scrum Masters to be aware of them and to help others become aware of them. And finally, another cause that we identified in the book is that Scrum teams consider learning and work as different things. Now, a very simple example of this are the meetups that we host, and people often ask us if we can host these meetups in the evening, at least in our time zone. Now, that's interesting, because the reason behind that request is usually that organizations don't allow people to participate in meetups during the day, so instead people join meetups and learn something in the evening, in their own time. So, in organizations that suffer from zombie Scrum, what we find is that people are implicitly taught that learning and work are separate things. Work generates value, while learning only costs time and money that could have been spent doing more real work. So, people have to participate in meetups in the evenings or even in the weekend. Or they have to learn, they have to participate in training and workshops also in the weekend, which is very common in many countries. The implicit message here is that people get paid for work, and since learning isn't real work, they have to do it on their own time, or at least it's not valued as much as doing the work. And that makes it very hard to improve, because improving something requires that you learn, right? So there's a big disconnect between how organizations think about that and what is required to make Scrum work. Let's move to some closing thoughts. In this episode, we explored how continuous improvement is the lifeblood of Scrum teams. Unfortunately, many teams struggle to come up with even small and tangible improvements. Instead, they resort to vague improvements without taking ownership of them. We also explored some of the reasons why continuous improvement is difficult for teams. Now, we'd love to hear your experience with this. What are things that you've tried? What are other reasons that you've found that make it hard to continuously improve? Now, if you're curious if your organization is learning effectively and how your team is working with Scrum, you can check out the Zombie Scrum Symptoms Checker. It's available at survey.zombiescrum.org and it's available for free. You can invite your entire team to participate, and at the end of the survey, you receive a profile that gives you an impression of how you're doing with Scrum. And the survey also asks specifically for learning behavior, so you'll find some feedback on that too. Now, if you're interested in recovering from zombie Scrum because you found that your organization or team has a lot of it, we offer more information in our book, The Zombie Scrum Survival Guide. It's available for pre-order at zombiescrum.org. We'll officially launch the book on November 23rd, but you can already make sure that you get your copy in time. And with that, we've reached the end of today's episode. I want to thank you for listening and taking time to learn something. As we talked about in this episode, that's really important too. So for wherever you did that, maybe in the car, on your way to work, or maybe on the bicycle like I always do, or in public transport, thank you for listening, and I hope we see you again for the next episode. Take care, stay safe, and see you soon.